There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
From the home of Time.
It is now quite a day for local sport from your local team.
Woo! This is Charlton Live.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Song. Wake up, wake up, you sleepy head. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, love and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
How on earth are we going to drag a routine 1-0 win over Oldham out for an hour and a half?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Very good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes and joining me in the studio here at the Valley as we get set to look back at yesterday's 1-0 win over Oldham plus a couple of other bits is Mr. Tom Wallin. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
We got a mouthful of there.
Crazy sour Skittles.
Crazy sour. You're supposed to be an adult, Tom.
I'll try not to chew them too much into
you
the microphone.
You Wally. joining myself and Tom Wally is old man Smudger Terry Smith. How are you doing, Tom?
All right, mate. I'm going to make these hellos last about, 45 minutes if we can. I'm on Strepsils if it's of any benefit to know.
No, it's not.
No, I didn't think so. But it's got to be better than crazy what? Skittles? What?
Crazy sours, Skittles.
Yeah. Feel free to ask.
No, you're good.
I'm eating enough.
No, I've just got a coffee since we're going around the studio. I've stopped off at a BP garage.
Just for yourself, wasn't it?
Yeah. So on tonight's show, we will look back at yesterday's 1-0 win over Oldham here. from Mr. Carl Robinson, and pretty much Mr. Carl Robinson's comments from yesterday. I think they're going to fill the rest of the show. There's so much that's come out of the post-match yesterday. Obviously, he's not happy at the moment with what's going to be a very dry January in terms of transfers here at the value of the club. Pretty much in limbo, really. Roland de Châtelet has admitted that he's ready to sell. But he's not quite ready just yet, so we're in limbo, and it doesn't look like we're going to make any signings at the moment. So we're going to have a lot to say about that. We're going to hear from Carl Robinson speaking to Tell. We're also going to hear from Carl Robinson speaking to me about 15 minutes before that, because he hadn't properly calmed down yet, so he's at his angriest, so it's worth hearing. We want to hear from you guys as well on yesterday's game, on anything that comes out of the interviews, on how you see the state of the club at the moment. Is such a bizarre time, and I could have said that any time during the last 4 years, but this weekend in particular, it just feels like there's so much going on because nothing's happening, and it is such a weird time. So we want to hear what you guys make of all that. You can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. you can tweet us at Charlton Live. You can head over to the Charlton Live forum. There's a thread on there where you can discuss tonight's show as well. Also, later on in the show, we're going to hear some clips from some fans I interviewed yesterday for BBC Radio London, from Mitch and from David, who wanted to hear their views. So we're going to hear from that. We're also going to focus on tonight, our player in focus for this week. He returned to the Addicts for a second loan spell and scored on his second debut, his first ever senior goal. There's, of course, Steffi Mavadidi, our match winner yesterday. He's our player in focus. I want to know how you guys think. Do you guys think he is the man who's going to save our season? Because, I mean, well, he's got one hell of a lot of pressure on his shoulders now, because he looks like the only signing we're going to make. So let me know what you think about him. Right, lads, before we delve into the really sticky stuff, yesterday's game, there was a game of football yesterday, and it was our first win in 9, and bizarrely, after not winning for 8 games, we're now just 1 point outside the playoffs again. Tom, you were there? Enjoy. Yeah,
you're the man to dive into the sticky stuff first.
It was awful. absolutely awful. Look, we got 3 points. I'm happy with that, obviously. Mavadidi's goal was class. Amos made a couple of great saves, but the game itself was poor. We're up against a side whose form was about as bad as ours. I think slightly better.
Give them some credit.
Yeah. It was just a dreadful game between two teams who are in very poor form. But as I say, we got the win, and you're right, we're a point or two off the playoffs suddenly.
Terry, were you more entertained than Tom was?
Not a lot. Well, yes, because we had Jake Forstakaski in between myself and Greg for the first half yesterday, so that was fun.
What was he doing?
He was trying to make it sound better, trying to make the game sound as better than it was. It was a nothing game. I mean, very similar to the Portsmouth game as well, whereby we come up against a side that isn't very good. We should have pummeled them out of sight, and had we had our first choice 11, maybe we would have done. We didn't, and then we rang it on at the end, but fortunately, Oldham are considerably worse than Portsmouth.
Excellent.
Otherwise, they might have nicked it.
Yeah, well, excellent. Now that Tom and Terry have sold it to us, let's hear the highlights from yesterday's 1-0 win over Oldham Athletic from Valley Pass, starring Terry Smith, starring Greg Stubley, and special guest Jake Forstakaski.
Joe Rebo trying to ride the first tackle, manages to get it to... Sorry, that was Mavadidi getting it to Joe Rebo, and now Ricky Holmes on a bit of a run in the centre circle, goes for the shot, long shot! Off the crossbar! And he'll drop into the hands of Placide. Charlton's so close to taking the lead.
Hopefully that's a little spark to get us going now.
We saw Ricky Holmes score that wonder goal against Oldham last time. They must hate against him. Charlton have the ball now to Silva down the line for Rebo. Rebo cuts inside, and he's a bit unlucky as Green comes across. Just gets it away, only as far as Mavadidi. Little shimmy on the ball, approaching the penalty area. Now take the ball past Garner. He's in the penalty area. Mavadidi onto his right foot. Still Mavadidi.
Oh, yes! What a goal!
What a finish for Steffi Mavadidi. On his return to the Charlton team this week, on loan from Arsenal. What a strike that is to score his first Charlton goal.
That's a spark that we've been missing.
Well, they've been saying all week in the build-up to this game, after Steffi Mavadidi had signed, you saw some dissenting voices or voices that just said, well, he's not really got goals in him. Well, he certainly has. And what a goal it was. Cutting inside his man, first going round Dummigan and getting into the box, showing the man inside, went outside, back inside again, and then finished in the keeper's near post. Gave him no chance. What a finish, what a goal.
Back to Hunt, who chips it down the line. Towards Nepomuceno, and Kasia picks it up, but he doesn't know. Hunt's in, Hunt's gone for goal. A decent effort, curling towards the far post. Just put a little bit too much on it.
Yeah, I played with that Rob Hunt at Brighton. He's got two great feet. So we've got to be careful about him coming inside.
From Lennon and Mavididi trying to pass it back, and it might fall for Holloway. It does, but Amos is able to gather. And Mavididi headed it back to Bauer. Wasn't expecting it. Let the ball run.
Up in the air from Green, and Dumoulin watching all the way. Holmes is still battling for it. Comes to Mavididi, and penalty on the left-hand side. Finds Holmes. Holmes shooting chance. Oh,
it's come off the back of Josh McGuinness, who was offside anyway.
Concert down the line to Holmes. Holmes, edge of the penalty area, cuts his side onto his left foot. Holmes chips it towards the far post, and it ended up almost as a cross shot, which Placide punches out for a Charlton corner.
Yeah, he didn't look confident there, the keeper, did he?
That's all being allowed here, which is really quite strange. Dumigan's going to come back on the pitch.
The referee's just booked the Oldham goalkeeper. He can't be time wasting it, 1-0 down.
What the hell?
What's that about? As the goal kick comes,
unless
he's time kick
wasting
comes away
because it's, why would, no, I don't get it.
Picked on down, up towards Dumoulin, little reverse ball to him. Dumoulin with the cross ball into the box, and Holloway's met it. Oh. That's a good save from Ben Amos.
What a chance for Oldham.
Lennon is furious, saying that Holloway pulled him back. The referee saying no.
I did find it strange that Lennon fell to the ground and Holloway is able to turn, make us a space. Amos was quick out to block it.
Into Obadiah with a flick, and he's still there. Holloway with a shot blocked away by Kashi. Still on the edge of the penalty area. Charlton struggling to get it clear. There it might do. No. Moshik, but again, Gerrard's there. Out to Obadiah. Shapes to shoot. Doesn't. Still on it. Moshe now with a shot blocked away by McGuinness on this occasion.
The corner of the opposite penalty area now. They hold him. Cuts in on his left. Possible shooting. Trying to get it on his right again. Still on his left again. Trying to find Holmes. Does so. Hogan. Oh, edge of the 6-yard box. Saved away by.
Too many touches.
Looking for Bauer. Placide gets something on it. He's dropping in the 6-yard box. Bauer's there. Back to Marshall. Shot. Oh, flicked away. Might fall to Holmes, or is he going to let it go over the corner? So he's got to do this by himself. Now McGuinness gets there. Gets the ball in towards McGuinness. Jackson's there with a header. Oh! Just flicked away from going goal bound. Johnny Jackson by Wilson. Almost a perfect start for Johnny Jackson, but Charlton has
it. He goes right to Gerrard.
And there is the final whistle. A little bit earlier than I thought. Actually, it's about 15 seconds early, but we're not going to complain.
I don't know what you're talking about. It sounded like a cracker.
Vintage game of football yesterday here at the Valley. Charlton heroic 1-0 victors over Oldham Athletic. Jokes aside, I mean, that was a dreadful game of football. It really was. That second half, the last 10 minutes was quite exciting when they nearly came back into it and then we nearly killed it off. But, I mean, God, it was boring.
Classic. I mean, again, I said it before, like Portsmouth, they come here with a particular shape to try and stop us playing. And I said it before the game, actually, that when you've got sides coming in and they know the sort of fragility we have, especially in the back four, where we haven't had a settled one for God knows how long, then they raise their game because it's at the Valley anyway, but B, they have that more confidence than they would normally have because they think, well, if we can keep them quiet, we might nick something because they are fragile at the back. And even when they went 1-0 down, they kept exactly the same shape. They sat deep and we... you know, especially in that second half, I noticed the midfield were getting so frustrated that they weren't being able to create anything. They almost became the front line. The gap between the back four and the rest was huge. And you had somebody like Mavididi coming short at times in that second half and looking up and there was nobody there. And ended up having three Oldham players around him and trying too hard, taking it too far and losing it. And he wasn't the only one, of course. So it was a really strange game that never really got going. We thought after the goal we might kick on, but Oldham never changed their shape at all. They kept in that rigid 4-4 and sat deep. Didn't give us any space behind them. Maybe if Holmes' shot had gone in or one other had gone in, it might have been different. But while it was 1-0, they never changed, hoping to do what Portsmouth did to us back in November.
Yeah, the game couldn't have been any more different to the reverse fixture up at Boundary Park when we won 4-3. And it's ironic, really. I mean, and it's true, though. You do see teams that are low on confidence. All of a sudden, they come to the Valley and they start playing a bit better. It's a shame that never happens for us because we play at the Valley half the time anyway. But they never seem to find that. I mean, in terms of performance versus result, I mean, yesterday, before the game, I would have taken what I saw yesterday just because we're so desperate just to get out of that horrible rut we've been in since mid-November.
Yeah, and that was my feeling as well. Obviously, I did come away from the game not really having enjoyed it as a spectacle, but the most important thing, I mean, obviously, every game, the most important thing is a result, but more so yesterday it felt because of how we've been. You know, we haven't won in the league since mid-November. We've not played well. We've got all these injuries. And we just, it had a feel that I just couldn't see where our next win was coming from. And you come up against a game like this, and you, especially in that second half, when you see them starting to get back into the game and create a few chances, and you think, here we go again. Is it going to be like Blackpool or like Portsmouth, like Tel said? But we managed to hang on. As I say, Amos made a couple of really good saves yesterday, kept himself big and imposed himself on strikers, and we held on and we got the win, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, actually, Blackpool is the one I should have been comparing it with, because that was the smash and grab one at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so,
right in the last
so
minute.
It is Blackpool. I was comparing it to. I apologise.
If it, in terms of what we have been lacking over the last few weeks, a spark, and Jake Forster-Kaski said it himself in the highlights you just heard there, just after Mavididi scored that goal. I mean, very similar to some stuff we were possibly seeing from Tariq Fosu earlier on in the season. Just someone who can drive with the ball, keep hold of the ball, get into the area, because when a team comes and sits back and makes it difficult for you, sometimes you can't pass through them, sometimes you just need to run through them, and that's what he did, and it was a superb goal. And like I say, that's what we've been missing, I think, over the last few weeks.
He's got great quick feet, and up to the point he scored, he was brilliant. It seemed to me after he scored, and I think maybe the elation and the celebration after he scored might have taken the wind out of his sails.
That job's done then, isn't it?
Yeah, he seemed to go a little bit flatter afterwards. I mean, don't get me wrong, he still looked quality on the ball. But as I said earlier, I think he tried too hard at times, especially in the second half. But you can't discount the first half hour that he played, which if it wasn't for him, it would have been 0-0, or even we might have lost it.
Were you surprised to see him come straight into the starting lineup? Because I mean, over the last few weeks, I think Carlin has possibly staked a claim to start, and so a couple of people might have suggested that. But I think the way he played, I think that showed Mavididi's possibly a step above Carlin.
Yeah, and I agree. I think he had to go in. I think Carlin has been unlucky not to get more starts, because I think he has looked lively. I'd also argue that I'm surprised Marshall's got as many starts as he has at the moment. Kind of trying to play his way into form, which he shows glimpses, but for me he's not doing enough, and he's not really suiting the style of play that we're doing at the moment. So I don't know, Carlin, Ricky and Steffi maybe would have been had a bit more urgency about it. But yeah, Steffi deserved to start, proved it with his goal, and as you said at the start of the show, he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders now, because he seems to be, as Jake said, that spark we're missing, and he's going to have to perform like that pretty much week in, week out now.
I think you're right about Mark Marshall, by the way, in as much as that we're certainly not playing the way that that suits him, no question, because there's a lot more defensive responsibility on him. I mean, he put in a shift up at Wigan that was outstanding, but defensively. Yesterday, again, he was putting a shift in, covering down that right side. And occasionally, as you say, there was that moment where you thought, he's actually, you know, that's why we signed him.
Yeah.
But it's not nearly enough. And I wonder if that's because he's spending so far in our half, helping out the right back, or coming inside to help out to keep that midfield nice and narrow.
And he's had that serious injury.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors there, I think.
And also, possibly, I think, I mean, if you look at our last really defensive performance, was Wigan away. Now, Carlin played as a striker in that game. And I thought he was excellent away at Wigan, where there was lots of space to run into. Whereas Mark Marshall, quite happy to fit into that structure. And we spoke to Mark after the game yesterday, and you'll read that in the South London Press website tomorrow about 7:30 in the morning. I do feel that maybe just a slightly more experience in terms of being a defensive player. But I think going forward, I think Carlin certainly given a lot to offer over the last couple
of weeks. We saw yesterday when Carlin came on, Josh went wide. He didn't go wide, Carlin. Yeah. So maybe there's a case for we're always assuming Josh McGuinness has got to play out front on his own. Maybe it's the case. We'll have to play it on the floor in that case. We can't just pump it up long as we tend to do now when we're looking for a target man. But maybe we've got to play it on the floor that little bit more. But if we're going to do that, with the midfield three we've currently got, and I don't think it's possible. We got basically you have Marshall, Holmes and Joe Rebo with a midfield three. We're then assuming Mavididi was supposed to be the number 10 behind Josh. I'm assuming that's the way it should have been set up. I mean, I mentioned it just now, especially in the second half, you had Joe Rebo, Ricky Holmes and Mark Marshall all alongside Josh McGuinness and Steffi Mavididi. So it was five up front at one point. So when you're trying to build, the gap in between two is just too big. In the first half, and when we scored the goal in that immediate half hour before it, all three of those players were close, with Jada Silva as well, doing those little 1-2s and little balls down the side, and the movement was great. That disappeared in the second half. And I don't know if that's because you panic a little bit and you start worrying about losing and trying desperate to get a second goal. I don't know. Maybe it's just human nature. But what worked in the first half hour seemed to stop and yeah. And we didn't do it for the rest of the game.
Boosted by the return of Patrick Bauer as well. First start since the game against Peterborough. We came back from 2-0 down and slightly more experience perhaps than Naby at the back. And do you think, did it show?
Yeah, I think he had a good performance. Yeah, I think Lennon's looked a little bit shaky as well. But again, coming off a very long injury layoff and still very young. So I'm prepared to give him benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I mean, when we talked a little bit on Thursday, but when we look back at those first two, three, maybe even 4 months of the season, when we were playing well and when we were getting results, Pearce and Bauer were pretty much playing week in, week out. And we obviously saw games like the game up at Rotherham, where we were defensively, you know, unbelievable. Bauer getting on the score sheet then as well. But then we had games like Oldham away, where obviously we conceded a lot of goals, but we still had that consistent pairing with Solly and De Silva either side of them as well. And since that's had to change through injuries and Saar coming in and Lennon coming in, and even Konsa filling in there occasionally as well, it's just been a bit more shaky and we've conceded goals. And you could see that yesterday, you know, when the entire crowd were trying to encourage them to push out when we were defending free kicks, and they weren't. They were staying rigid on the edge of the penalty area because they just were too afraid of letting someone in behind. And luckily, now that we've held on and we have got that win, hopefully now they can start to try and get some of that confidence back and build. But yeah, having Bauer in that back line does make a big difference.
No question about it. And the only time he worries me a little bit is because what he does do very well is read the ball forward and gets in front of the centre forward or the striker before the ball gets to him. He does that very well. Sometimes he does it when he really shouldn't and ends up getting turned, but didn't happen too often.
Pulling a shirt.
Exactly. I thought we needed that, especially yesterday. I'd have been really worried with Naby Saar and Ezri up against two quite physical, tall strikers, which they had yesterday. And I would have been concerned that we would have ended up what we did against Blackpool and lost it. Also, should give a comment to Josh McGuinness, who, when he was called upon, was huge in in our own penalty area.
Defensively yesterday, McGuinness won so much for us. And I guess, whereas he's certainly been ineffective at the other end of the pitch, he is helping out at the back and, you know, proving his worth in that position at least. Other than Ricky Holmes' thunderbolt that hit the crossbar as he tried to recreate his goal up at Boundary Park after 3 minutes, I think that the most exciting thing that happened in that opening 25 minutes or so was an Oldham fan with his shirt off. I mean, it was turgid. Well, we couldn't break through him.
I saw your tweet about it yesterday, and I was going to comment on the radio, but I thought people might get sick when you said about his nipples might be playing us onside.
Yeah,
which fortunately I wasn't eating at the time. But funny,
you weren't eating his nipples.
If they'd have been as large as you were expecting them to be, I probably could have done.
So there we were. Like I say, we were struggling to break them down. I tweeted as much, and then within 3 minutes, we were in the lead. That superb goal by Steffi Mavadidi. Now, we sort of made a joke on Thursday after we signed him on the Cheltenham Live Twitter page that, just get him to run through every other team every time he gets the ball and we'll just win every game. Well, it's 100% record so far, and we knew he's capable of that, but this time he's added that finish to it as well. And, you know, in terms of a confidence booster for the young man to get his first ever senior goal, I mean, that's going to be huge for him now.
Yeah, and the important thing is now that he keeps it up. Because as Terry said earlier, he kind of dropped off a bit for the rest of the game, but hopefully he can pick it up again next week. But yeah, he'd made a couple of runs earlier. Obviously, he'd got the book in for diving on one run where it looked like he was going to go the whole way.
By the way.
Put him.
That was nonsense.
Yeah, I have to say, I thought he was fouled as well. And then that one, as you say, the calmness when the ball came out to him to just wait until his man came too close, burst past him, and then in the box as well, that calm finish. You know, there was loads of space for him to fire it in at that near post. And yeah, it was a great goal, and he's still obviously got a long way to go, but Carl clearly sees something in him and was desperate to get him in the summer. I know it didn't really work out at Preston, but you know, that extra drop down maybe at the moment suits him, and yeah, I'm obviously happy he's here.
Be interesting to know how much game time he's had in the last since he's been at Preston, because that might explain why he dropped off if he hasn't had a decent 90 minutes in him for a while.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, in terms of appearances, he had a fair few, but I don't know in terms of whether they were all off the bench or not. I haven't really looked that up, so I'm not certain now. But even then, after that, I mean, I don't really have many chances written down here in that first half. I mean, they responded with a shot, I think, from Rob Hunt that was cold. Sort of just over pretty quickly after. But then, I mean, the game just, you know, continued in this fairly mundane sort of pattern. And like we said at the top of the show, it really wasn't a classic, was it?
They had two big chances in the second half, which Ben Amos had to deal with. And if they'd have had a bit more quality, not discounting what Ben Amos did. He made himself big and stopped and got the blocks in. But you think if they had a bit more quality in that striker position, they might have done us a bit more damage. And who knows what could have happened. But then on the other end, after they opened up a little bit in that last sort of 10-15 minutes, we actually had two or three more good chances with Carlin as well. So I think, yeah, it's a game. I mean, it's an old cliche, isn't it? But it's a win. You know what I mean? And later on, we won't care.
Yeah, I mean, that is the equivalent of a striker needing to score and it goes in off his backside. That is a scrappy old win, and you take it any which way it comes. Valley Floyd Fred says, I really like Marshall. Don't think he deserves the stick he's getting. He needs a goal, I think, but he works so hard. Now, I don't think you can question his work rate whatsoever. No.
I think he's a victim of his own success against us. Do you know what I mean? People were expecting something else, and he's having to fit into our style rather than the other way around, perhaps. But I don't agree with any of the stick he's getting. He's not done, I think, going forward, what we'd like him to do and what we've seen him do and what we know he's capable of doing. But maybe that's a combination of issues, as we said earlier.
I think it is that last point, though. It's what he's capable of doing. And you see him get to the byline and he'll check back in, or he won't get the cross in. And we know that he can do it, and we know he's got it in him. And whether it is, you know, the system, whether it is coming back from the injury, whatever it is, maybe just a lack of confidence, he's not doing that at the moment.
By the way, a really nice man.
Oh yeah,
he came in to do a
press conference yesterday after the game, and then was happily chatting away afterwards as well. Even when one of my questions was a bit not a horrible way, but I saw we were talking about Carl and he's I said he's like a kid who's just had Christmas cancelled with the transfer window coming up, and Mark was like, you know, this is nothing about your question, but I like to focus on the positives, and he's a very positive person. Which is good to see. Half time yesterday, always delighted to see the crossbar being hit on the crossbar challenge. Nice. So $6,500. That always cheers you up, even though I'm not going to see a penny of that money.
The highlight of yesterday.
That's where the transfer funds have gone. Yeah.
I think it was Ray Bates I saw tweeted yesterday that Roland's delaying the sale now because he wants another $6,500 on the sale price to repay that crossbar challenge. Now, start of the second half. Now, this is off. I thought Aaron Holloway up top for them was just a little bit of a thorn in our side at times yesterday, and he put Patrick Bauer under a little bit of pressure at the start of the second half. And now I think Bauer's been much improved this season, but there has been a couple of times over the years where I thought a couple of personal duels, his positioning, and maybe his battling, he's missed out on a couple of times. And I think that happened early yesterday, and Ben Amos sort of dug him out of a bit of a holder. I think it came from a back header from Mavididi, possibly got away with one there.
Yeah, I think so. And we definitely, in recent games, we've come out a bit sluggish at the start of the second half, and I didn't think yesterday was much different. And yeah, with them a goal down, they're going to have a little bit more impetus to go for it. And you're right, that is where Bauer falls down. As I say, I said earlier, I think him and Pearce in an ideal world would be starting, and I, you know, I have less concerns about him than some of the others, let's say. But yeah, Holloway, he played well, to be honest, in a fairly poor side and a side that didn't create a huge amount of chances. And they did. It just had that feel, and because, you know, like the Portsmouth game, the Blackpool game, we've had plenty of others here through the season. When you see them start to get a little bit further on top in that second half, you think, right, here we go, that we're going to concede again. But luckily, because they were so bad, it didn't work out, and we managed to hold on.
Now, there was a couple of times we saw a Ricky Holmes goal-bound shot that was blocked by Josh McGinnis, who was in an offside position anyway. And you see that, I think, oh dear. But, you know, just that's pretty much how it's going.
That's the opposite off a goal off your backside.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it's going for Josh in front of goal at the moment. He's stopping other players scoring in that particular case. But and then Ricky had another one, which I thought it was a cross, where the left-footed one, the keeper ended up tapping wide. But maybe it's just the angle I was at. I couldn't see what Ricky was trying to do.
Keeper made a lot of it. I have to say, I think it looked like a shot, but it was very soft, and the keeper made it
big,
a lot.
Big fan of the Oldham goalkeeper, by the way. The only goalkeeper I've ever seen booked for time wasting whilst losing
1-0. That was unbelievable, wasn't it?
I mean, I think what he was trying to do was he wanted to wait to get his injured teammate back onto the pitch. Well. But yeah, genuinely the first time I've ever seen a goalkeeper booked for time wasting when there are 11 minutes left in a 1-0 defeat. But you know, that's a sort of maverick we like to see here down at the Valley. So in the last 10 minutes, that's when it did really sort of open up, and that's where I perhaps would have been the most exciting period of the game if you're a neutral who's come to watch it. And again, Amos was there to deny Holloway. Now the cross came in, Holloway turned quite nicely actually on the ball. I think it was Lennon he turned, and Amos was there to make a big save. And I thought I might mention this because I was thinking about this yesterday. But you remember at the start of the season when a lot of people were very nervous about Ben Amos? I haven't heard a word of that for a long time because he's
quite
been very
so,
good.
By the way. Yeah. Quite rightly so, because I think the first couple of games, I think there was that sort of looked like a nervous edge.
Yeah.
But when you consider that the defence in front of him has changed almost weekly, yet he still managed to pull off save after save. I think he's been one of our best players.
Yeah, it definitely was yesterday. Those saves, you know, shouldn't go unnoticed. And I think I mentioned it on the show before, but when we were up at Rotherham in the warm-up, he let one go through his arms and into the net, and a fan sort of joked with him and he turned round and said, oh, it's better to get it out of the way now than in the game. And then we obviously went on to keep a clean sheet up there. Mm. And yeah, since then, I mean, we interviewed him, didn't we, after Bradford, was
yeah.
it? And,
he won us 2 points that game because he made two amazing saves in that second half of Bradford. And I was thinking the amount of times he's won us points now this season, whereas... You know, like I say, at the start of the season, we were nervous because we'd heard stories about his time at Cardiff as well. And I think he's been superb.
He's been brilliant
for the last few weeks.
Even things like just corners at the end of games. Like, I know we have conceded a few late goals, but with him, you expect him to come out and make those big claims, and he does it. As Tel said, when the striker broke through yesterday, he kept himself so big and didn't go down easy, and made a big save again. And I don't know necessarily exactly how many points he saved us, but he's been a massive part of the success.
It's funny, though, that the game that I didn't commentate on the 23rd, the Blackpool game, when they scored the equaliser, my instant reaction, though, was, oh, Ben should have come for that. Because I was in the lower covered end, so fairly low rake onto the pitch, so the view wasn't what I normally have in the middle of the West. So I thought, oh, Ben should have come and claimed that. Surely that was in and around the 6-yard box. It wasn't until I watched it later on the telly that I realised, no, it's miles away. There's no way he was getting there, even if it had come. So it's strange what perceptions you get in different positions of the ground.
That's
one
way of saying you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, that's normal anyway. But what I'm saying is, if people who are in that lower part of the government and get the same sort of view, that might be their reaction as well, first off. And so that might be why sometimes it's not quite as clear as it otherwise should be.
Yeah, so then I think it's from the resulting corner that the ball fell loose. I think it was to Holloway again, and he fired it at goal and it got cleared from near the line. And then Charlton had three huge chances to finish it off. Carlin, Ahern, Grant, I think Marshall had one, and Jackson in injury time all came really close. And so gutted they didn't get that, because our Charlton Live cashy back bet this week, which would have won money for the upbeats, was Mavididi to score first and Charlton to win 2-0. So this is closest we've come to. We would have won about £100 for the upbeats, but sadly
Jacko should pay it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
He shouldn't have
well with the skipper, that should have been a goal.
Yeah, so sadly it wasn't to be. But like we say, the final whistle goes, 3 points. It's very strange feeling around the ground at full time. I gave it a little fist pump when the final whistle went. Then you look around, it's very quiet, and especially when we got into the post-match interviews as well. But it's just a strange feeling. It didn't feel like our first win in nine, really, did it?
Well, the nature of the win probably didn't help. If we'd have steamrolled them 4 or 5-0, it might have been better. But it was more relief than victory, I think, the overriding feeling. Even the tunnel jump at the end had a bit of a flat squib about it. But fair play to Jada Silva for doing it. Although, didn't Mark Marshall come out as well?
Tried to steal. Jada Silva's not very tall as well, so I guess he was worried that if he jumped, he might not have seen him. So Marshall joined in.
So maybe that wouldn't have helped, but yeah, you're right. It was a very strange atmosphere.
I think there's just so much going on, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in the rest of the show, that I think a lot of people's concerns aren't necessarily focused on the pitch at the moment anyway.
Freddie said, other than Clark and Fosu, Amos is up there with one of the best signings of the summer. An incredible man. He's so focused as well. He's very down to earth as well. I think he's very level, which I think is probably good to see for a goalkeeper. Now, on tonight's show, we're going to hear from Carl Robinson twice. The reason being, I get to do the... I was in the tunnel and I did the first interview with him not long after the game, maybe 20 minutes after the game maximum. And he was in a very... deflated mood despite the fact we won 1-0, and we're going to hear from that later because he touches a lot on the situation around the club as a whole. By the time he came to speak to Terry, he'd also done a couple of other interviews since then, so I think he calmed down and he was mainly talking about the match, so we will hear that now. But he does sort of touch on the transfer stuff as well, which is important because that is going to play a big part in the rest of tonight's show. But this is what Carl Robinson had to say to Terry after yesterday's 1-0 win over Oldham.
Well, after a 1-0 victory at home here, how are your fingernails? Hanging on a bit towards the end.
It's quite calm in some ways, because it was almost like, well, let's... When Jacko went on, we looked very calm, obviously. But one thing young Joe Rebo, young Carlon, young Steffi, Jay De Silva, Ez, but a really young team, Harry Lennon. So you're seeing that a little bit in our nerves. And one thing Jacko did, he just brings on a little bit more of a calmness.
Understandable enough, though, we've gone a fair few without a win, so you can understand a little bit akin to the Portsmouth game where we're so desperate for the 3 points that by human nature you're going to drop.
So naturally that we drop deep as well, but naturally the fans get frustrated because you've got two sets of people that care so much, and then the fear factor steps in, and that's certainly what it was today.
But delighted for Steffi. I mean, it's been a frustrating. I actually asked you the other day, and you correctly said no, because I said, was this, I think, the worst period you'd had as a Charlton manager? You rightly said no because of last season. But probably what I meant to say, and in hindsight I should have said, is frustrating, because you can
it's
see
the most frustrating I've had. Yeah, I'd agree with that, yeah. Because you're looking still to come back. The likes of Piercy, Pat's not fit, Souls is still going to get back, Jake Forster-Kaski, Tariq Foshu's is still got to come back. And then we need to bring in two or three others to support that. So, yeah, because I know how good we can be. But maybe just sort of scrappy results like we did today, that can be something that can really turn the tide a little bit.
And one person you did bring into the club and back to the club, Steffi Mavidi, started as he finished, really.
I thought he was exceptional when he was here last time. And, you know, in the second half, he went through and he got pushed and it almost replicated the injury that he had on the other side in some ways. And we all looked at each other and sort of smiled. But listen, we've got to bring him back in slowly. But he's certainly one that can tear defences inside out. And you've seen the goal that he scored today is just a wonderful goal. But the play underneath that was very good. It was hard today because when they dropped into the banks, it was difficult to break down. Obviously, people get frustrated about you having to go back around and across. We need to get across the pitch a little bit quicker, yeah. But then every time we got frustrated, we tried to play a straight pass into where they flooded the zone, and then we give it away. Because we sort of got carried away with the emotion of it. We need to be patient and we need to just get teams out. Every time we were patient, we pierced them. So we need to learn to play under that pressure, and that's something that we've got to learn as well.
And maybe with bodies back, that's an easier thing to do when you've got...
a settled team.
Exactly that, yeah, and especially a settled back four. Although, I have to say, Harry Lennon again, only what, third game back is pretty...
Yeah, that's a big worry to us because he's not played for 14 months and we're playing him week in, week out, 90 minutes. That's a very difficult place for him to be.
It's half your job watching the side at the moment, looking to win matches, but then also looking to make sure that you've got a fit side by the end of it, because every time one goes down, it must be horrendous.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But it's the thrills and spills of being a manager. I'm really pleased with the fans and the players today. They showed tremendous fight. We weren't our classy self, obviously, but we will learn to, and we'll get better. I thought Ez was exceptional playing right back. And Josh McGuinness defensively today was as good as the performance from a striker helping out his defence come off the hour in some ways. He puts his goal scorer onto one side, Josh, for the team. And that sometimes goes amiss. We talk about the goals and frustrations with that. But he made four or five headers today that were sensational, and he made two blocks with his body which were top draw. And sometimes that's more important than a goal when we're trying to get ourselves out of this little bit of a rut that we're in.
Needed to defend well because they're a physical unit, especially up front, and so balls into the box were always going to
Craigan, trouble. Craigan and a threat, obviously. They've lost Euler, which was someone obviously we were looking at. He's now for 3 months, which is a bit of a loss, not only to them, but equally big enough for us. We probably would have tried to get the player. That's a bit of a disappointment to us. But where we sit right now, we can't do any trading, as everybody knows. We've got to wait and see what happens above us, and that's a difficult place for me to be. The transfer window doesn't prolong itself just because you want it to stop.
Indeed.
Every minute that passes that we wait, a day goes amiss.
And other teams potentially get stronger, which is frustrating.
Well, we've had two players that we were going to get that have gone.
Well, nerves, anxiousness and frustrations aside, it's 3 points and a little bit closer to the playoff zone, so not a bad afternoon.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. Little chip ball, looking for Lorana Fosu, who's onside. Fosu, edge of the penalty area. Can he get a shot away? He can, and it's the opening goal. Tariq Fosu sprung the offside trap, gets his second goal of the season, and Charlton's first of the evening, and they're 1-0 up here at the Banksia Stadium.
Oh, I've not got a cap, but if I had a cat, I'd be kicking it all over my house tonight.
Welcome back to Channel 9 here on Maritime Radio. That's Carl Robinson speaking to Terry. After yesterday's 1-0 win over Oldham, now at the very end there, he started to touch on, of course, the transfer issues here at the club.
Yeah, it was almost like he started to talk about it and then quite realised what he might be saying. And so the next switch came in, he was like, yeah, thanks, bye.
Yeah. it's a strange one because it's not like he's been afraid to say it. I do think he believes that Charlton Live is some sort of official club channel, which is interesting.
Yeah,
because,
I agree. Well, I think it's because he sees me a lot.
In an official club,
exactly. So it thinks that I am, even though I'm not.
Yeah.
And so when I'm in Iraq, yeah, exactly. Part of the problem.
Belgian mafia.
when I'm in here afterwards, and of course I've still got the Charlton T-shirt on, which they asked me to wear. Then he probably thinks that I'm part of the club radio, as it were.
Mm.
I mean, he's not always as forthcoming as he might be elsewhere.
Yeah. Now, of course. He did talk about the game, a special mention there for Josh McGinnis as well. He talked about his defensive work. He talked about, I think he admits it's not the best performance we've ever seen, but overall he has to be satisfied at least to get out of that rut, at least, because the longer that went on, the less chance we had of scraping something out of this season.
Absolutely. And he said on Thursday, look, if we win this game we're a point or two off the playoffs, and that's what we've gone and done, and he's got to look for any positive that he can. And I know he's not coming across as too positive in interviews that he's been doing recently, and there's a number of reasons behind that, but whatever's going on, he's responsible for keeping this team ticking over, because everything else that's going on behind the scenes can't mask the fact that we're a football club and we have to play a game every 7 days, sometimes two in a week. So he's got to focus on that. He's got to get us to keep playing games, because although on Thursday we suggested that if we can't get signings, this season might well be a write-off, he can't think like that. He's got to keep pushing until the very last day of the season.
You say he can't think like that. He does think like that. It feels like to me. I just don't know if over the last couple of weeks, or the last, not even a couple of weeks, ever since Thursday, I think he's sort of projected that he does possibly feel like that. Now, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn there, but let's listen to what Carl said after yesterday's game to me as well, because like I say, this was not what he feels is more of an official club channel. This was a media BBC Radio London interview where I don't know if he just felt he could let a little bit more go. So this is what Carl said to me after yesterday's game.
It's a great result. That's all it is. Honestly, I think we're papering over cracks, over things behind the scenes at the moment. Let's not beat around the bush. But in January, we need to bring players in.
We talked about that result's left Charlton 1 point outside the playoff places now, but you said on Thursday...
Yeah, but I was saying this in the middle of December, this is something that we need to do. And we've known for a few weeks, and it's almost like, everyone sort of accepted it. I'm not going to accept it. I really, really love being here, and I know the players, you can see by... Yeah, we weren't there technically today, far from that, but we were certainly there in heart. I think every player left the body on the pitch... and you could see that in the way we're at the end. And I said, Marshy, you don't see wingers working that hard anywhere up and down the country. And Ricky Holmes, Steffi, obviously, it just shows you how important bringing in fresh players is. It gives you an impetus and a front foot. Young Joe Reba, a little bit off it from where he's been. You've got Pat there with vomit at half time. You've got Len, who's been out for 14 months, who shouldn't really be playing. Nabby's injured. Pierce is injured. Souls is injured. We need to find consistency in what we're trying to do. I don't mean to put a negative spin on a great result. The players were outstanding in their endeavour today, and the fans were exceptional in the support of the players. But I'm a little bit sort of. The fact someone said to me, walking off, are you okay? Like, yeah, I'm okay, but I care. And I think this football club can be successful this year still. And that's something that matters, my job. So I've got to moan and bump things and put things. Well, I'm willing to do that.
Have you had any further update on the takeover as well? We asked you in January?
No.
Absolutely nothing?
No, nothing.
And that's why you're so disappointed at the moment, I guess.
Yeah, because obviously we've lost in some ways where I go to get deals done at the moment. I'm speaking to agents. I'm doing every job, and my staff from Lee Bowyer to Jacko to Steve Gallen, we're sort of doing three or four jobs more than we are. We're not leaving the training ground at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night and getting in for 7:30. And that's just what we're trying to do at the moment. It's just one thing after another. But I care so much, and I'm sort of trying my best, and my staff are trying their best, and the players who we have here are still fit are trying their best, and the fans are still getting behind us. Okay, today at 1-0, it was hard being a fan because the frustration and the fear was creeping into the place, and that's what happens when you go on a run of results like that. Everybody works so hard behind the scenes, and I've said this before, if you're going to take over a club, take this club over, trust me. The infrastructure here is here. The players are here. They need building on. They need coaching. They need developing. They need more help. The fan base is here. The area is ready to go again. What a great moment to take over a club. And I've said this a number of times. The owner said he's selling it. So come on, step forward and get behind this club and come and guide something to a bit of success, because it's long awaited. And hopefully the club someday, and regardless whether I'm here or not, that's irrelevant. That doesn't matter. It's about the people who come in and then where we go from here. The stability that the football club needs, the work ethic, the desire, finance, everything that goes with it.
Mascots here from yesterday before the game. But as we said, so Carl Robertson there speaking about the the takeover. Even in leaving us, he's still making it difficult, isn't he, old Rowley boy? He's confirmed the club is up for sale. He's confirmed he's in negotiations with however many parties. There's all sorts of rumours flying about who these parties are, whether one of them's pulled out or not. I don't know these things, but all these different rumours fly around and people put them out there. But the crux of the matter is, right here, right now, we're seeing a January transfer window where we know we're not going to buy anyone. I mean, I don't know if I kept it in that clip, but I tried to ask Carl about Steffi Mavididi yesterday, just about his performance. He went straight away on, that was agreed before Christmas, so they couldn't revoke that one. So obviously Carl felt like he's done some work. He mentioned it there, he's done some work. It's gone to waste on players who've now gone elsewhere. And he's seeing his chance, what he feels his chance of getting to plug these injury-filled holes, his chance is going away.
I'd imagine the Mavididi one was decided and settled because we knew that Joe Dodu was going back. So therefore the funds...
I couldn't replace him. I can't see on the bench.
Fair enough. So, in terms of bodies, and I suspect whatever financial arrangements happened because of it were settled because of that. We're talking about... what Carl wants, six new bodies completely to add to the squad without getting rid of anybody. And with all due respect, I know that the reasons are there because of what's happening currently. There is takeovers apparently imminent or happening. Are we sure that would have happened anyway? Really?
No.
When did it happen before the last 4 years?
I guess the only possible slight difference, and whether it would have proved to have been, we'll never know, is that story that we've heard a couple of times. Well, if we're doing well in January, then we'll take the gamble, which we heard under Bob Peters, but we're in the relegation zone pretty much.
True,
whether that would have been proved to have been true, we don't know.
What's happened in previous seasons? We've lost Gomez. We lost Lookman. You know, almost certainly, if the equilibrium would have stayed where it was, almost certainly. Ezri Konsa would be out the door, almost certainly. And then we had no money in return, and then a few loan signings in potentially, and so back to square one. I don't know if that would have happened. Maybe that I'm being harsh, and maybe if there wasn't a takeover agreement, we would have signed six players. I don't know, but past history tells you it wasn't necessarily likely.
Yeah. I mean, you can see the frustration though from Carl coming through there, Tom. And do you think valid? I mean, we'll talk about it now. I mean, what you said in public on record to interviews, press conferences, whatnot. What he's alleged to have said to fans yesterday. And I don't know if listeners would have seen this thread on the forum now. You take stuff that goes on the forum with a pinch of salt, but I mean. A couple of people have said they've heard that this conversation happened, and we know Carl's spoken to fans in car parks before. I mean, the day he joined us when we were at Bristol Rovers, he spoke to a friend of mine actually, and leaked some stuff. So whether he said fully, he implied that he was quite upset. And now whether he used the exact words that he said, it might have been a bit. I mean, someone put the link on the forum today, and I'd thought it before that, is when David Brent's trying to pretend he was going to slag the Swindon lot off. I mean, he may have slightly over-egged what he said. But the sentiment would have been there, and he must know that if he did say that, and he did say it in public, then it's going to end up on Twitter, on the forum, and whatnot. So he's certainly getting his side of the story that he's fighting for the club against Roland now. And now many people will point out that's not how it's been for the last few months. He's been trying to defend Katrine and Roland, because that's his boss. But now it's obvious that Roland's going. He certainly seems to be aligning himself more with the fan point of view on that side of the battle.
There's such a huge amount to pick out from what could or is alleged to have been said. I think, look, he's always claimed to be very open and honest since he's been here. I saw someone say, look, you can't criticise managers. Or what we've had, our criticism for the last 3 years has been that we've had no word from the club, and now we have. But obviously this is a bit more of an unofficial word, if you like, from Cole. But yeah, he's obviously in a very difficult position. It must, you know, if what he said is to be believed, he's going out, he's meeting agents, he's getting everything set up to the point where he can go to his board and say, right, let's sort out this player. And that last stage can't happen. So does he just ignore it and not bother doing any of that and then risk a takeover where we haven't got anyone lined up? So he's in a very difficult place. He's obviously frustrated. He does seem to be getting on the side of fans. I don't know where that leaves him. And that, again, depends on the takeover. But he's made it clear in recent weeks that he thinks he'll be off if a takeover does happen. So it's all just, there's just so much going on. You've got Roland, is he selling, is he not? You've got Carl, does he want to be here, does he not? We're players, are we getting them, are we not? There's just, it's such a manic month, and I think we've all said it, we're just in such a state of limbo at the moment, and we just need something to happen so that everyone knows what their position is. That includes Carl, that includes the players that are here, the players that do or don't want to come here, the owner, the fans, everything. Because at the moment, yes, we've picked up a result yesterday and we might pick up another couple in the next few weeks, but we just don't really know what's happening with the club.
Right, let's get on to the correspondence, because we've got absolutely loads of it this evening, and we're really grateful that you guys want to join in with the show. If you still want to have your say, you can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can go over to the Charlton Live forum, where I am Dan has said hello this evening. I hope you're enjoying the show, Dan. So let's have a look. The first one is from James. Tweeted this yesterday. Said, Cashy was poor today. If he doesn't go sideways or backwards, his passes don't hit a red shirt. 4 or 5 long balls in the first half wasted. Other players were guilty of this, but he was the worst, and when he is supposed to be a playmaker, he needs to be much better. Every player out there today are decent in their own right, but don't play as a team. Josh McGuinness needs a rest. He was better today, but I'd like to see something different, and 2 up front today would have been a much better option. Those 11 players to start today should have torn them apart. Now, the first one's about cashing. I think someone else might have mentioned it earlier on the show. I mean, is he a playmaker? For me, he's more of the defensive midfielder who's going to win the ball and then give it to, I mean, Forster Caskey's not playing at the moment, but the likes of Aribo to get forward.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head there. Forster Caskey wasn't playing, and he's normally a lot closer to Akmeke. Akmeke is the sort of player that's there for a three or four yard pass and then gives a 3 or 4 yard pass. Yesterday he was trying to force it. And I've not seen him try those sort of 30-yard crossfield balls much at all. So the fact that he was trying them, I think, spoke volumes for the fact that there was nothing in front of him to give it to, as I mentioned earlier. The gap was too big, so he was having to go long, and that's not his game. He's somebody who's always available, always there for the short pass, gives it simple, and then goes and gets it again if necessary. He's that sort of link between everybody, and he shouldn't be doing the 40-yard pass. And the comment's correct, because he was giving the ball away, because he was doing that, when mainly because he didn't have anybody close enough in front of him to give the ball to. Other than the first half hour, I think he did, because you had a lot more movement. You had Mavididi, Holmes, and everybody coming shorter and playing off each other, and that seemed to stop after we scored, or not long after, anyway. Mm.
And then, I mean, James also mentioned in his second tweet there about the 2 up front. I mean, this is certainly something that we've heard a hell of a lot of from fans over the last few weeks. I mean, thoughts on that? We know it's not Carl's favoured formation, but he did play in the second half, I think, against Gillingham, where in that second half we looked much better, because the first half was an absolute shambles against Gillingham.
I think there are times and places to do it. And yeah, I think he needs to have a little bit more flexibility in doing it. I actually think yesterday when Carlin came on and went up top on his own with Josh out wide, that still worked okay. And I think the difficulty we had yesterday was nothing to do with the formation. It was, as Tel said earlier, the fact that Oldham got those two banks very, very tight to each other. We, if anything, had too many people higher up the pitch, and actually what we needed was somebody to drop back into that Jake Forster Caskey role and pick up the ball in the centre circle and then look for options. So I think 4-4-2 does need to be played more often than we've played it so far this season, but it needs to be the right time. So yeah, he needs to be a little bit more flexible, but we've seen how stubborn he's been, and he's tried it that once, but I don't know how much we'll see it through the rest of the season, really.
F. James tweeted in this afternoon and said, yesterday's result was great. I'm not happy to hear that Carl Robinson could be replaced, though. A throwback to when some Charlton fans had enough of the Premier League safety with Kurz. For goodness sake, don't let this mistake resurface. Now, I mean, It's something that we've talked about. Carl's talked about it himself. Takeovers often bring changes of managers, and now, so therefore, what's playing out now is one big long job interview. And if his job interview was based on the last eight games results wise, I mean, any new owner might be very tempted to just wield the axe. Now, obviously, we got that win yesterday. He started, like I say, realigning himself now quite vocally with New Charlton, if you want, getting ready to try and join with the fans. Some people would say. I mean, what happens when the takeover goes through? Does he get a chance? Does he get taken out straight away?
We're clutching at straws here because none of us know, but a lot maybe depends, and I don't know how much he knows. That's the other thing. Does he know who's coming or who's potentially going to buy?
I don't think anyone does. I don't think even Roland does at the moment. Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah. So if he doesn't know, then he's naturally assuming that people who come in will want everybody new, and so replace from top to bottom. That doesn't always happen. I mean, it didn't happen when Roland came in. It happened eventually, of course, but Chrissy Powell stayed for a little while. So maybe he's also hoping, just in case, that the new owners, whoever they are, will wait and see first. So that's why I think he's hedging his bets a little bit. Mm. But he's right, of course. Normally speaking, new owners, it'll be new everything. Whether he's heard anything in the background, who knows?
Yeah, James Court, talking about Carl Robinson, said he had nothing but praise for Roland and Katrine when he first joined the club. Your choice to join the circus that runs our club, Robinson. Now, I mean, if you look at clubs that have been, you know, in turmoil over the last few years, so, you know, people will look at Leighton Orient, people will look at Blackpool, people obviously look at Charlton Athletic as well as one of these clubs that stands out as one of these chaotic clubs. Leeds United, another one, up until Cellino left a few years ago. Now, I mean, players go and play for these teams, managers go and manage these teams. I mean, football managers' jobs, there's 92 of them in the country. There's not a million of them. And you know, as much as we love to believe that football managers and football players are doing it for the shirt, as much as they even say it, as much as we'd hate, you know, Dean Kiely joined Crystal Palace this week, a job's a job. And no manager's going to turn down, you know, a job at still a big club. I mean, he knew what was going on in the background for sure. But every manager, I think, is a bit cocky. A cocky enough to think I can go in and change it, or B, cocky enough to think, you know what, I'd quite like that. I'd quite like another year's employment here. So I'm just going to go and take any job anyway.
You can't be a manager unless you've got a bit of an ego about you. I don't think you can do the job unless you've got that little bit of an ego about you that says I'm capable of doing this better than anybody else. And to a certain extent, it might be you can't be a footballer for the same reason. So I'm certainly would have looked at it and thought, yeah, I know it's a bit chaotic, but bear in mind what I've been in for the last 10 years or however long he was at MK Dons. I'm used to that sort of nonsense. I could be the one that turns this around, and my CV is going to look absolutely amazing because of it. And so I'm sure there's a part of
the public eye's on that club a little bit more, isn't it, as well? So if you're the manager that turns that around, you're in the public eye a lot more. So look at Riga when he then went. Okay, Blackpool was another basket case of a club, but he was a manager that was in the press a lot because Charlton were.
And by the way, I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, Carl. I actually have warmed to him, and I don't think he's done a better job at all. Mm. All right, we can sit here and say, well, we should. Do we play 4-4-2 occasionally? And yes, I think we should. Do we play this player occasionally in that position and not that position? Yeah, we've all got opinions on that. I think generally, for the position we're in, I think he's done a pretty good job.
Mm. Well, they called me Lou yesterday.
Well, yeah.
That is the death knell, because Russell Slade got sacked about 3 days after calling me Lou. So very worried about that. Now, this next one comes in from Reese. So certainly not a great performance, but the most important thing is we ended the poor winless run, so I'm delighted with the result. Performance certainly wasn't encouraging, though, and I think against any team a bit higher in the league or on a better run of form, we wouldn't have got away with that. Bauer, I thought, was excellent, and yesterday showed how much we missed him. He's certainly better and a lot more calmer than Lennon and Saar. Amos made two or three key saves, which I think went a bit unappreciated, and fantastic to see Mavididi can still go on fantastic runs and finish. Two, have to push on from now with two very winnable games away at Bury, who haven't scored or got a point from their last six games, then at home to Walsall, who are also on bad form. You've just, I mean, people moan at me about doing my stats, Reece. You've really done it there with Bury not scoring or getting a point in the last six games. He goes, win those and then there'll be a lot more optimism. Still can't say I feel any more optimistic about playoffs than I did before yesterday's game. And I can't see us going up without signing a fair few more players. I mean, if you look at the league table, it's very much a battle for sixth now, which is quite scary. And before yesterday's game, I think we were 11 points off fifth, which I was shocked when I actually looked at that table and realised the gap between us and a position that we were quite comfortably in, what felt like about 3 weeks ago, but it must have been slightly longer, but shocking. But
having said that, that also shows that there's the potential for it to change around the other way, because if we're that far off it now, then the, you know, results need to go our way for 3 or 4 weeks and it'll be back the other way. Considering the run of form we've been on, when you look at the results since November, to still be where we are is we're pretty fortunate to Absolutely. Have done it. Look, we've got that win, and it's important that that doesn't stand alone in another poor run of form. We need to back that up with a few more wins, and if we can, we've still got that one game in hand against Shrewsbury. We've obviously now got a cup replay as well to think about. So, you know, there is the chance with that we could be 3 or 4 points off fifth. Is that still brilliant? No, but I have to agree with Tel, considering everything that's going on, to be where we are is not bad, really, considering what we've had to put up with this season. And who knows, if we have a back end of the season like we started the first couple of months, then we could definitely be close to fifth or fourth or somewhere, you know, a bit more secure in the playoffs. But there's still a long way to go. It does depend what happens in January, not only with transfers, but with just the whole ownership of the club. But, yeah, I don't think we're that far away from being that side. And we've obviously got people starting to get back fit now. I know Solly's on his way back, and Fosu, it looks like, who was obviously probably the best player for us for the first 8, 9, 10 weeks of the season. So, yeah, perhaps we're turning a corner, but it is just one win, and it was still a poor performance.
McGuinness Miss tweets in saying, not our best performance, actually, maybe our worst of the season. Bright sparks though were Mavadidi and Bowie, yet I thought Lennon was poor, sadly. Some observations on Robertson: are we really still playing 4-2-3-1? It relies too much on backwards passing, then it rates McGuinness somehow. I don't see it. I thought Oldham was shocking, seriously missing Doyle up top. I mean, speaking to Oldham people yesterday, I mean, I think they've lost 3 or 4 loan players. I mean,
four went back.
And Owen Doyle in particular was, I think, third or fourth top scorer in League One, but he's had some sort of clot or something. Yeah. I don't really understand the
injury. I think both of their top scorers have gone.
Yeah, because they had someone else who was about sixth or seventh as well, which I was surprised to see. Those two must have scored literally every goal they've scored this season. McGuinness Miss continues, hopefully new owners in by the weekend, otherwise I can see attendances dwindling, and that's all. Really, I mean, I'd love to see new owners in by the weekend as well. I'm sure Carl would if you ask him. Yeah. But whether that's going to be the case, I'm really not sure. Right, we had a DM in from a Charlton nurse who says, hey guys, first time I've tweeted in, I love the show, please read this out, I'll be listening on Monday morning. I'm going to write this season off as we'll be lucky to make the playoffs with injuries. However, if a takeover is complete, and very excited for next season. I think Carl should stay. I think he's proved himself enough this season in what is now difficult circumstances. I really hope he stays and can build on the fabulous work he's done, and he's backed properly in the transfer market, and he goes to get all of the targets that he wants. I think Roland will sell some of our talent in order to make back some money, and he will provide even more evidence that he is nothing but an absolute... All right. I can't say that word.
Leave that.
Yeah. Once again, I love the show, and I hope you'll read this out as I'll be listening on Monday morning. So I hope you're enjoying your Monday morning, Charlton Nurse. I mean, it's the point there on Roland selling players. Now, presumably, if we're in this state of due diligence, then surely wouldn't, because that would... If you sell £5 million rated Esri Konsa, and all of a sudden you're asking someone to buy a business for the same... whatever you've agreed, and then it's worked, and then you've got rid of £5 million worth of assets, and surely that's not the case.
It'll need somebody with a lot more savvy than certainly than me, who knows the legal stuff, but I wouldn't have thought you could do anything like that, whether it's sell players or sell bits of... It's like trying to sell the slates of your roof if you've just done the deal for your house. Do you know what I mean? There must be stuff you can't do, and surely that's in there. But on the other end, does that mean... is it the same... buying people as well? If there was a deal to be had that you could sell somebody for five, but and then buy some five four people for the same money, does that constitute good business and therefore you're allowed to do it? I have no idea.
Tim Ruffle and Carl Robinson says he surely isn't surprised though on the upcoming disappointment in the transfer window. It's nice that we can predict it though. Well, I guess we've been able to predict it for the last few years, but we know it's happening. He must have known or been told about Roland's meddling and lack of support RE transfers. Now, I mean, that's the point. We have known over the last few years, we have come to expect disappointing, particularly January transfer window. So sort of in a way we're expecting that, but like I say, there was that ever so slightly, you know, that tiny dangling carrot of, if you're doing all right in January, I might give you a little something.
Yeah, and we've had no precedent to go by for that position.
and this is the only season we've ever been in that position.
That's true.
And now the takeover's supposedly happening, which means it can't happen then as well. I said, or I tweeted out the other day, it would be a typical of Roland if he's just cocked up this elaborate plan just to get out of investing in January by claiming there's a big takeover and actually nothing's happening. But yeah, if that's to be believed, then we'll never know. Because Carl obviously has come in and said, look, I'm going to be backed in January if we're there and thereabouts. We are there or thereabouts, and he's not, but there is this takeover. So who knows? That's the way it is now, unfortunately. But yeah, hopefully we won't have to deal with that next January.
I mean, worst case scenario, that's not even the right phrase, but let's say we can't buy anybody in January because of what's happening, because there is a genuine takeover. Maybe, you know, the takeover itself provides the impetus that we need, rather than the fact that we need four players. Because if we replicate what we did in the first half of this season into the second half, we end up with roughly about 80 points. I think Millwall got into the playoffs with something like 73 last season. So it's still potential playoff positions. Hopefully it's better than that, because we've still got just under half a season. You know, it's what, two games over half a season we're at the minute. Hopefully, if we can't rely on new bodies in January, then hopefully the takeover, when it does happen, provides the impetus. We get players back from injury, and we can still do some loan business, I think, up to a certain point. Who knows?
Yeah, but I think takeovers don't cure tired muscles. And I think obviously that first half of the season form is a fresh squad that isn't blighted by what is, you know, half a year's football now. And, you know, you're always going to be recovering from that. I was saying the other day, it's a perpetual injury crisis now, because someone gets injured, so someone else comes back.
It's a revolving
too
door,
soon, and
it?
They and then they get injured, so the other person comes back too soon. And that's how it goes. Bob Liskin says, what frustrates me more than anything is our reluctance to go forward. Cashy and the centre-backs just pass it sideways. Attack, I say. But I guess when teams are sitting back, you do try and pass your way around them. And that's what happened. Sebo said, a win like yesterday can bring back a lot of confidence, and confidence will breed more wins. And from there, who knows where that will take us. And that, I think that was very much a Curb saying, wasn't it? Wins breed confidence. Confidence breeds wins.
Jake did say in the talk yesterday that the mood in the camp was good, but confidence was low, because we haven't won in 10. Or we'd only won 1 in 10, I think, wouldn't he? We hadn't won in 6. So he admitted that the confidence was a bit low across the camp, although the mood was pretty good. So I think everybody knows in the squad that we've got a decent enough side, but fairly down because we're not winning games.
You can see it in the way they play as well.
Now, I knew this was going to be brought up at some point today, and the tweet comes in from Roger Trask. I mean, last night I was going from the game, I was just trying to relax, and my phone was going absolutely mental with people speculating. Now, Peter Varney, it was announced yesterday, has left Ebbsfleet United. Obviously, Peter Varney used to be the CEO here. The person to look for here is Rick Everett, who seems to have some sort of direct line, and he assures us there's nothing in it, and there's nothing worth speculating. Ebbsfleet themselves denied there's any link with Charlton. So, to be honest, I really don't think there's any further to take that. It sounds like it's something that we don't want to speculate. We just leave Peter to get on with whatever he needs to do. So I really don't think there's anything in that from what I've read from Rick. And like I say, Rick seems to be quite friendly with Peter Varney, so I don't think there's anything more we can say on that.
No, and if Peter's, I know Peter Varney not superbly well, but I know him, and if anybody deserves a rest, that fella does. So if it's just to put his feet up, good luck to him. Now, that doesn't mean hopefully in the future, when everything, the dust has settled, that we might look to him back in the future, because he's got Charlton in his heart. But at the moment, if he just needs a rest, then fair play to him.
Colin Hart says, Louis, is there any bones in Ricky Holmes going, or have you not heard? Now, I saw that some people were spreading rumours yesterday. I mean, again, I can't say I've heard anything, and with what we were discussing about, surely in this situation you wouldn't look to sell players. But at the same time, I mean, we've done some strange stuff in the past anyway, so I'm not going to rule nothing out, but I can't say I've heard anything too concrete on that. Danny Owens points out that Robinson said that he felt he had a capable squad at the start of the season. And now that's where, you know, I mean, I think Carl made it quite clear as the January transfer as the summer transfer window was coming to a close, he wanted another striker. We were talking about that quite a lot. And as soon as the window slammed shut, he's saying, well, you know, the squad is capable as it is. Now, is that man management of the squad? Is that man management of his owner trying to keep him happy? I mean, because it's quite clear that we all... all knew we needed at least one more striker at the end of that transfer window. So, I mean, do you think he said that for specific like morale reasons? Yeah,
I think he said that for the squad, basically to say to them, right, you're my boys now. Go and do what you can do.
Bearing in mind, I think when he was asked it, we still had Novak and it was the other fellow that went, Jose. So didn't we still have them two when he made that statement? Possibly. And then we got rid of them fairly shortly just before the window shut.
Can't remember. I can't remember exactly when he made it. I mean, but obviously, yeah, we got rid of Novak on the last day, and that's when we did bring in Joe Dodu.
I think it's clear that the squad has not been good enough or strong enough.
I mean, yeah, you got to balance that with the fact that we've had a horrendous number of injuries, which you wouldn't normally expect. But on the other end, if you've got a better squad, but if you've got a deeper squad, you rotate a little bit more, your strikers rotate a bit more, and you manage it. You're able to manage it more.
Yeah, how Josh hasn't got injured, I don't know.
Well, it's just as well.
Paul Williams said, what we thought of the game. My three-year-old daughter, Kaylee, loves him. We call him Big Bad Josh. Big Bad Josh. I assume that's Josh McGinnis. So hard to explain to her. He might look bad, big, and he is very bad. And not in a good way. Love our optimism gets the annoyance if we don't score. But like I've said before, he is our problem. Blocking a goal from Ricky, poor running, poor hold-up play, poor heading, poor work rate. Countless times. Way off the pace, poor decision making. I know you lot love him and I wish he was good, but he's not a natural attacker. Please prove me wrong.
I'd sort of agree with most of that, but not the work rate bit. I mean, nobody who is who doesn't put the work rate in is in his own penalty area blocking goal bound shots. I'm sorry. So the rest of it, I sort of understand where he's coming from. He doesn't play as a natural striker internationally. He plays more wide, so clearly that's necessarily. Being a lone man up front isn't where his strength is, and I'd sort of understand people's opinion of that, but there's no way I'm agreeing the work rate bit.
Chris has tweeted in a couple of times. He said, I got from that Carl interview that if Roland doesn't sell, that he will walk. Now, my view on that is, I mean, when you don't often see managers walking these days because you get paid off if you get sacked.
Exactly, yeah.
So I'd be surprised if he walked. And B, I mean, if he knows the takeover is coming, if he can stick it out, he might get a transfer budget or he'll get sacked and get his pay off. It's pointless walking these days. I mean, there's no... there's no honour in football if we're being honest.
Well, maybe it's just because of his, Carl's sort of body language, which at the moment is a little bit down.
Well, he's not happy, is he? He's clearly unhappy, and I do think he does genuinely want to achieve what he can achieve with what he thinks he can achieve with this club, and you know, there's currently a big stumbling block in that way. I mean, people say you knew that stumbling block was here before he came anyway in the form of Roland du Châtelet, but you know, he's obviously very very disappointed at the moment. And then Chris adds Igor coming back rumours. Now, the only people I've seen making that rumours is the fans. I mean, I haven't seen it elsewhere. Apart from Igor, he tweets a hell of a lot of Charlton kit pictures. But I think he'd probably just run out of clothes in Belgium. So he's wearing a lot of Charlton training kit. I mean, the only thing I can say, I mean, the idea of getting the likes of Igor and whoever else off the books, even if it is on loan, is that then we're not paying those wages. So all of a sudden, it's not like Igor coming back is free. You have to pay the wages again. It's not like that doesn't change your budget.
No, indeed. And by all accounts, he was on a significant wage. Don't get me wrong, a fit Igor is someone I'd welcome with open arms because he was brilliant when he came in.
Yeah, but unfortunately, a fit Igor lasted three months and then we never saw him again. We saw a very unfit Igor with his problem. Not necessarily his fault, but he just was not the same player after that. The first half a season or so, unfortunately. Right, my voice needs a rest. Let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. In fact, it's going to be a little clip. I went out into the car park before yesterday's game to catch up with some supporters. So I spoke to a couple of Charlton fans. Mitch, who I told him it was for BBC Radio London. Then he asked if it was going to be on Charlton Live as well. So I thought, well, if you want it on Charlton Live, you can have it. And first of all, I spoke to David as well.
Now, Charlton fans have been toasting what they see as a Christmas present with news that Roland du Châtelet seemingly close to selling the club. That news has come during a poor run of results on the pitch. It's seen the Addicts slip out of the League One top six, mating today's game with Oldham, who've never won at the Valley, extra important. So, what is the mood like amongst the supporters turning up this afternoon in South East London? Louis Mendes has been finding out.
Well, hopefully the new owners will have some spare money to invest in the club and players, and hopefully then we can progress on and get back up to the Championship.
Yeah, I guess with the form that Charlton are in at the moment and the injury crisis they've got, then sooner rather than later, I guess, we'd be hopeful to try and get some players within January.
Of course, obviously injuries is one of the, you know, happens in football, but we've just been unfortunate this season with injuries. We were doing quite well to start with, but obviously the injuries, we haven't got a big enough squad to score, and we definitely need someone up front to start banging the goals in, because you can't win games without scoring.
And what would you think about manager Carl Robinson? As you say, he had the club playing so well at the start of the season, and this injury crisis seems to have knocked him back a little bit.
That's correct. I mean, any manager, even Mourinho, if he lost all his top players, he'd be struggling.
So do you still feel positive for this season? Charlton Stoke only 4 points outside the playoffs at this moment.
If we get some players in, then I think we've got a chance to progress up into the top six and then hopefully get into the playoffs. But we'll have to wait and see what they can do.
Yeah, and how do you see today's game with Oldham going?
I think we should win today's game because I think the fans get behind it. Now they know that the new owner's coming in, there'd be a bit more emphasis on the fans cheering it, and hopefully the players will respond as well.
I'm always optimistic. It has been a bit dire at the moment, to be honest. So it's not been fun watching them. For the few youth team lads that come in, Joe Rebo's done all right. But we just need more bodies in. We're lacking in bodies. That's what we need. So
I don't know if you heard the interview with Carl Robinson during the week where he talks about the upcoming transfer window, and it didn't seem too positive about whether there's going to be any more signings with Roland looking to sell the club at the moment. So what did you think about that?
I'm not very hopeful. I was surprised we got Mavdivi back in, to be honest, alone. And I don't think we're going to get any more in. So I think we've got. So
yeah. So just in terms of the potentially upcoming takeover, I mean, do you think that is the step that's needed now to take Charlton?
Absolutely, it's the only possible way forward, I think. So,
and with Katrine leaving, do you think that was a step in the right direction?
Absolutely, I just feel sorry for the Sheffield Wednesday fans, to be honest with you, mate. So
yeah, the performances on the pitch. I mean, are you worried at the moment that Charlton are going to sort of slip out of the playoff race at this moment?
Yeah, I don't know. We just need to change it up. I think we're getting found out with the one up top. I think we need to start playing two up top, but we ain't got enough heads. So. Not got enough bodies in, so we can't do it.
Charlton fans there, obviously an early disco for Luis Mendes to go and have a chat with them in. They're building up the atmosphere. Put my heart on the line for
you. Further out to Fosse on his left. De Silva's on the overlap. De Silva, ball into the box, looking for McGuinness. Gets his head there, but just skips off his head, in fact. And Solly will pick it up on the far side. Chip ball banging in the box. Headed clear. Drops to Ricky Holmes with a chance. Oh, what a cracker! Oh, Ricky Holmes, what a belter that is! Absolute stalker of a shot.
And Leon Best is being warmed up and ready to come on, and you can hear the boos from his former home supporters.
Right, you know the script now, Leon. You know what to do.
Flicks goal bound and it's an own goal. And I think it's come off Leon Best.
The best.
Welcome back to Charlton Live here.
Always does as I tell him, that fella.
Maritime Radio. I was desperately trying to remember who said the stupid thing in that clip because I made it before Christmas. Well done, Terry. You stepped up to the plate there. Good to hear.
You ask, I deliver.
Yeah, good to hear from Mitch and David there, Charlton fans, who I spoke to before yesterday's game against Oldham.
Need some new tunes on your iPod, don't
you? Yeah. Well, I mean, people moan about Katrina. I mean, that kids' fun park was absolutely banging with that music out there.
Did you let the kids on the trampoline in the end?
No. Right, Chris Davin sends an email in for tonight's show. It says, so after months of trying and on some occasions noticeably not trying, we finally get 3 points. The mighty Oldham, also winless in a very long time, were put to the sword. Come of the day, come of the man or boy, not quite man, teenager, stand up, Steffi Mavididi. An excellent solo effort lit up the two-thirds empty valley. Despite our injury crisis, we put out a side capable of beating anyone in this league. In fact, our squad depth in this pub league is a lot deeper than most, despite Mr. Robinson's rantings. Now for Robinson's comments post-match. Seems to me he's looking for a way out, a jump ship, much in the way another loud, brash, annoying Mr. Neil Warnock left Crystal Palace for QPR when they were in administration. His CV would be intact from his spell at the Valley, and he'd love telling his story of his time working in impossible circumstances at the Charlton to annoy anyone who'd listen. His buddies at Talk Sport would lap it up as well. On to the mighty Bury, bottom and going down. No easy games in this league, though. A cliche that Robinson will trot out this week. In reality, there are no difficult games. It's the lowest standard League One I can remember. Injuries or not, we should be challenging top two. It amazes me how many apologists there are for Robinson. Guy Luzon got sacked after a similar run in a higher division with no say on the player signings. Just saying. What do you think? What do you make of that?
He's not a fan then.
I get the impression Chris Davin's not a fan of Carl Robinson. I mean, I think Guy Luzon got sacked after 9 games winless. I mean, historically, I mean, Carl's now had last season and this season had 2 8-game winless runs. Now, historically, that would probably be enough to get you sacked under Roland, ironically.
We've mentioned it more than once or twice, I think, haven't we? That there are certainly not this run, but certainly the last run, we were half expecting it to happen. and wouldn't have been surprised had it done so.
Yeah, Freddie said that apparently Millwall got promoted with only 66 points. Usually you need 70 to 72 to get to the playoffs. I mean, that is outrageous. I mean, they should be dragged back down for that cheating.
They'll do it themselves, yeah. Won't they, with a bit of luck.
Yeah. Steve Catley says, hi, all, a win at last, but what an awful performance. We really need to start attacking, as watching Charlton is actually becoming boring. The constant prevaricating with a four... I think he means persevering, possibly, or it's a word that I don't know.
Prevaricating.
Yeah, there's plenty of words I don't know, and he's used one of them there. With a 4-2-3-1 formation, which doesn't work with the players we have. Didn't Carl come into the club saying he wanted to play exciting football and score lots of goals? Well, that's not happening. It won't in League One. We've only one up front. We bring in Mavadidi, who dug us out of a hole with a moment of magic. But the rest of the game was dross until Cag came on and had a run at their defence. Had a Twitter conversation with Mr. Wallin yesterday after the game, and we seem to agree with the fact that Harry Lennon isn't good enough. I mean, did you go that far? Or
I thought yesterday in particular. Yeah, as I said earlier in the show, he's still young, but he misplaced a few passes and stuff.
He goes, and then he continues, or at least not good enough to be put into a role where he was expected to distribute the ball forward because he can't. How many passes were either overhit or just wayward? He only completed passes to Bauer or De Silva or Cashie, and that was because he seems to be playing as a third centre half, a complete waste of a player. Talking about Cashie there, Jacko showed the midfielders midfielders have to make runs into the box, but Cashie can't because he's 60 yards behind the play, and Aribo is the one setting up the chance anyway. But I mean, Cashie's a defensive midfielder. That's what I come to expect from him. The amount of times that Cashie wins the ball for us on the edge of our 18 yard box, I think that's more his job. He's not a forward playing midfielder. In my opinion. That's what he's saying. As for Carl and Roland's spat over new players, no surprises there. The bloke hasn't had a care for the club since he bought us, and if he is selling, why should he start to care now? Personally, this will be the one that gets the grumbles going. I would be quite happy if Ricky Holmes left this window. A great shot after a couple of minutes, and then it was every time he gets the ball. Then it was all about him every time he gets the ball. He doesn't play a pass to get someone else in. He's always looking for the 1-2 and is the worst dead ball taker since who knows when. How many crosses, free kicks and corners go beyond the last man? Let Aribo take corners, for goodness sake. Holmes can't take a decent corner for any confectionery, let alone toffee. We were so much better yesterday when we actually used him as a decoy and missed him out of the play altogether. If he's going to play, stay wide, get crosses in and stop running around the pitch like you own the place. As for Josh McGuinness, well, don't get me started. Playing wide or not at all, Cag should start up front. All the youngsters have experience of winning games, going forward and scoring goals in the under-21s and 23s, and that's obvious every time they get the ball. Why did we drop deeper and deeper again in the second half? Come on, Carl, where is this exciting football? Don't blame Roland. You have 11 on the pitch. You've got to get them going, not backwards, not sideways. Anyway, he says, rant over. Great show as always. Going for a lie down. Cheers, Steve. I'm going to need a lie down, Steve. cheers for your email there, Steve. We're into the last 10 minutes of the show here on China. I've still got plenty of emails to get through, so I'm going to... dive straight into them. Peter Sullivan says, welcome win yesterday to end what's been and continues to be a difficult time for the club. I feel sympathy for Robinson with the timings of the sale, if it's still going ahead. Totally destroyed his plans for transfer loans to help the team push for a top six. Now it sounds like he has had as much of an idea as what's going on as us. Not that Roland's got much history for sharing information, apart from Murray staying quiet. I wonder if Mr. Keohan had anything to say of importance in the last month or so. I can't imagine he'd be that involved with the football side of anything, so I wouldn't have thought so.
No, I doubt it somehow.
excellent stuff. Right, next email is from Jacob Stiles. Says, we are lucky to have Mavadidi, clearly better than this level, a bit like Lookman, but as long as this takeover is taking place, nothing will change. But in my eyes, the real promotion would be having a new owner, and I think it's fair to say that a lot of people have had that view over the last however long. Just quickly on a side note, I didn't watch the Liverpool-Everton game, but I know that both Lookman and Joe Gomez were playing.
There was a great bit on that where basically up to the point where Edamola came on, nothing got past Joe Gomez at all. He looked imperious, even at right back, which is not his preferred position, but he just looked unbeatable. And then Edamola Lookman come on, and I think in the second touch, just put him on his backside, absolutely roasted him. It's great.
Excellent stuff. Good to Charlton.
Well, great in as much as I was pleased for him, but not great they're not playing for us.
Yeah, that's true. Samuel Spong says, I think Charlton fans have shown their class by rarely calling for a manager's head during the worst period in our club's history. We have always respected no captain in the world can successfully steer a sinking ship. That said, multiple sources are reporting he'll be gone under new management, with the British firm apparently lining up Chris Powell. My question to you is, would you accept that chain of events if it ended with Powell's return? I mean, multiple sources is fans talking on Twitter. I don't think we can read too much into that. I mean,
I think it's more desire than fact, but who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of if that, would that be a desired path for us?
Who as a Charlton fan, wouldn't want Chris Powell back here? Come on.
Oh, I mean,
I'd feel really sorry for Carl, don't get me wrong. And if Carl stays, I'd have no problem with it particularly. But if there is a takeover close by and it happens, and part of that process was Chris Powell coming back through the door, you'd struggle to find a Charlton fan that wouldn't be happy with that, wouldn't you?
Heartbreaking if it was rubbish, though, wouldn't it?
Well, granted, but yeah. We'll cross that bridge when we come back.
Stuart Beadle says, it was great to see a win yesterday, but I feel so sorry for Robbo. Why is he the only one that keeps us informed as to what is possibly going on? We all need clarity. It's our club. Alex McLeish was the guest of Murray yesterday. Can only think he's part of a consortium, or hope he is. Him as manager would kill our club. Look what he did to Forest. I mean, managers, Sam Allardyce was here a couple of months ago. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be part of some sort of takeover, and that would be pretty brazen to come and sit in the director's box, like waving at people, I'm going to be the new manager when this current manager goes. Just the fact he was here, I don't think you want to...
The thing is, because nobody really knows what's going on, and there's so much going around, that any little thing like that, people are leaping on. So Ricky has a couple of bad games, people say he's off to Sheffield United, managers are sitting in there, that's it, they're coming in. You know, if you hear an Australian accent in the concourse, you'll assume he's the guy who's buying the club. So I think everybody just wants some clarity, and Carl said it himself the other day. And until we have that, people are going to keep speculating, unfortunately, which just... some people are going to believe.
Well, Alex, I mean, I know Alex McLeish is back in the country looking for work because wasn't he was in Egypt or somewhere, and that's come to an end, I believe, or pretty close to it, supposedly. So,
but Alex McLeish was in Egypt.
Yeah,
he's been
he's
a sunburn.
He's Scottish, of course. He's not going to have a sunburn.
Yeah.
I thought everybody was linking him with the Rangers job at one point, so I don't know.
And the thing is, like Terry said, if you're a new owner here and Powell's out of a job, if you are going to get rid of Robinson, surely that's the only person you're bringing in. I can't understand why you wouldn't.
Would McLeish have
I'm trying to think if he had any connections with any of the players we got in a minute, and I don't know.
He might just want to watch a game of football. Yeah, I mean, see managers wanting to go and watch a game of football all the time, especially when you're out of work.
Yeah.
Right, Marcus tweets in, hi chaps, I get why we can't buy or sell players due to the takeover, but I'm confused why the club doesn't recall a Jose, Vetekele or Hanlon. Robinson makes the point we only have one fit striker, bring one home. So I sort of mentioned it earlier, I mean, people sort of especially in the case of a Jose, I believe he's on quite high wages, and Vetekele probably in a similar situation. I mean, it's not free to bring players back because Berry will be paying a percentage of a Jose's wages, especially considering that, you know, in a Jose and Vetekele, you've got two players who, for the majority of their time here, haven't done it. I mean, like Igor had a great spell, a Jose got a few goals, but for the majority of the time, there's the old adage that players are much better when they're not in the team, aren't they?
Because, that's exactly what I was about to say, because you've said that a few times on this show, and I think it's right. Look, as we all said a little while ago, a fit Igor, I'd take him back all day long, but how often did we see that? And a Jose didn't fit the style, and I can't really see him fitting the style here at the moment either. I mean, maybe he fits into that number 10 role, but we've got Clark there when he's fit, obviously now looking to next season, and we've got Reeves there and Cag and Ricky and Fosu when he comes back. So I think we're stocked for his role. I do obviously still think we need someone to come in and replace Josh up front, but I don't think either of them are that man, unfortunately. Like I say, Igor, if he was guaranteed fitness between now and the end of the season, I would take a punt on him, but you just can't guarantee that.
Mark Newbury emails in, evening chaps, I know I'm in the minority who enjoyed the game yesterday. I've always had him down as a bit weird.
Strange man.
Yeah, that's why he's on the show these days. Didn't think it was as stinky as some, but after the drought of wins, a drowning man isn't going to pass up a raft, and I wait for a luxury liner to pick him up.
He's been reading the cliche book again.
Good way of putting it.
After the underwhelming performances we've seen in the previous 6 weeks, there was more effort and work yesterday, apart from Marshall, who gave his normal 15%, including the tunnel jump. Did have had the pit of a stomach feeling with 15 to go that we would concede, but relief as our defence held firm. Still feel we're trying to we're trying left side too much, and sometimes Aribo has at least 10 metres of space in good positions, but we don't find him, and he just stood there like a lamppost. The skipper's header was good, but Cag should have finished his chance. He took one touch too many, a couple of times. I think Cag just needs to let go a little bit more, doesn't he? But hopefully a few more goals will do that. Why the ref thinks that Steffi would dive after 4 minutes is nuts, and he looked reluctant to give us anything yesterday. Feel for Carl, and seeing Alex McLeish in the stand doesn't fill me with hope. Hope the new owner gives Carl a go instead of bringing someone in new for half a season. It would just lead to a season of what ifs. Thanks for your email, Mark. And finally, we did have an email from Alan Hyde, again asking the same Peter Varney questions. We won't go into that. So finally, we've got Dan Briordi on McGuinness. Says, hi team, Big Josh is just not helping us right now, other than defensively, does not make runs, loses most headers, does not score enough, and no natural poacher instinct. I would like to see Cag and Mavadidi up front and running into channels and creating space and keeping balls on the floor. Lumping balls to McGuinness is just too predictable, and he is not. Also massively irritated by our standard of passing rarely in front of the player and often under hit. Cashew is often guilty of this. And finally, Mark Marshall, last year highest assisting player for Bradford. What has happened? He says, other than that, feeling very positive. Regards from Dan. So thanks for your email, Dan. And we'll just very quickly dive into our player in focus this week. Has been Steffi Mavadidi. Couple of comments on that. GB Addict says, he's exactly what we need right now. A player who can create chances out of nothing and take the pressure off of Holmes and Marshall and Fosu. And Solly, Fosu and Solly are nearly back, and our upcoming fixtures are kind, so who knows where we could be in February. Thanks for the show, lads. Thanks for your tweet in, Mr. GB Addict. And John Charles White finally tweets, I do not think one player can do it alone, but he can play alongside Fosu when he's fit. There's a thought. So thanks for your chats about Steffi Mavadidi. If we had longer, we'd probably go more into that, because he is our player in focus. Bob just finally says that Igor apparently 28 games and 10 goals for St Truden. Now, I'd happier playing away from here. I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe I've written him off too soon, and maybe if he is fit, but like I say, wages will come into bringing him back. He's not free, and that's what we have to remember. And maybe Carl, maybe Carl just wants a different type of player, but we haven't really got time to go into that much more, because we've come pretty much to the end of tonight's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Thanks for all your correspondence. It's kept us going right up until the final minute of this show. It's been a fascinating weekend in a fascinating era for the club, and there's been plenty to talk about, and you guys have certainly talked about it with us, so thank you for that. Tom Wallin, thank you for coming in this evening.
Cheers, Louis.
You big Wally. Terry Smith, good to have you on again this evening.
Cheers, guys. Just to add a conspiracy theory, Alex McLeish managed in Belgium for a year before he
good. Sign him up. Right, this has been Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes. Thank you for joining us. As I say, I hope you've enjoyed this evening's show at this bloody bizarre stage of the club's history. Like I said, we could have said that any point really for the last 4 years. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on Thursday evening with a big match preview. Don't forget, Charlton are at home on Tuesday evening in the Check Yourself before you wreck yourself. Oh god, I hope we get knocked out. Anyway, right, we'll see you later.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.